Okay, welcome back. We have the honor of having Mitchell Henderson back with us tonight. Mitch is here once a week, and we go through extraordinary amounts of information and learning, the realizations that you can draw from listening to these programs is, I mean, I kind of wish I would be able to sit back and listen to them sometimes. Talk about a learning experience. It's been quite a ride. Hello, Mitchell. Welcome back.
Hello. Good to be here.
Yes, sir. Glad to have you on board, as always. So, what are we going to talk about tonight? Something interesting.
Well, what I want to talk about tonight is critical theory, because, yeah. And I want to put this to the audience. I'm going to speak as if I am a communist myself. I'm not going to say any value judgments until I get to the very end, okay?
So
no opinion. I'm just going to try to express this as if I'm a communist trying to teach other people, okay? Now,
Bolshevik.
I'm calling it critical theory because critical theory is Marxism, okay?
Yeah.
So.
Bolshevik Mitch, okay.
Yeah.
Go to it,
right.
Comrade.
So, Okay. So, first of all, critical theory. What is critical theory? The term critical theory was framed by Theodor Adorno and Max Horkheimer, two philosophers of the Frankfurt School of Marxism Freudianism. They came from Germany in 1936. The Frankfurt School philosophers were all Jewish, so of course they could not remain in Hitler's Germany for obvious reasons. They set up shop at Columbia University Teachers College in New York City. In America at the time, Marxism, socialism, and communism were considered bad things, so Horkheimer and Adorno decided to call Marxist philosophy critical theory so that students would listen to them. Yes, they had cancel culture in America back then also. So they said this in their book Towards a New Manifesto in 1956 as a record of a dialogue that they had. Critical theory is a method of thinking based on Marxist dialectical materialism. It is a specific method of thinking and should not be confused with critical thinking, which is a broader concept that is based on logic and propositional calculus, which are much older methods. So critical theory is
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Aren't they using
yes.
that term to kind of coattail in with their bullshit?
Yes, of course. What they said.
They have
to sell it. They couldn't sell it as Marxism or socialism. They have to sell
right.
it as critical
right.
theory. And everybody
yes.
listens to this critical theory and has no concept, no idea that is actually Marxism. I just want people to know that they published a book and they personally
yeah.
said that that's what they're doing, okay?
Yep.
So it's
yep.
not a secret.
Yep.
It's plain out in the open. So
Very
critical
good.
Theory is dialectical materialism, and dialectical materialism is a method of thinking and inquiry. So let me go over dialectical materialism, which is how you do critical theory. Dialectical materialism is an invention of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. It is also just called Marxist dialectics. So critical theory, dialectical materialism, and Marxist dialectics are synonymous terms. Let me explain dialectics first, because it is the method that you use. Then I'll explain how it applies to dialectical materialism. Dialectics was a method of elucidating philosophy through dialogues between people holding different points of view about a subject, but wishing to arrive at the truth through reasoned argumentation. This was the method used by Socrates and Plato in Greece in the 15th century BC. That's why the title of Plato's philosophies is the dialogues of Plato, okay? So dialectic means dialogue, basically. In the 19th century, German philosopher G.W.F. Hegel developed modern dialectics as a method of inquiry. The modern dialectical method was to propose a thesis and compare it with its contradiction, the antithesis. In this process of arguing the thesis and with the antithesis, you resolve the question through the synthesis of the two. In this argument, you will detect what is true about the thesis and what is true about the antithesis in order to arrive at the truth or the synthesis. this method was used to hash out philosophical questions or ideologies and stuff. So let's move on to the historical dialectic of dialectical materialism. So this is a Marxist application of critical theory in regards to class warfare. In the late 19th century, Marx and Engels adapted Hegel's dialectics to make it apply to real-world conditions in order to study problems inherent in social class, labor issues, economics, and in socioeconomics. This application of dialectics to read to real-world issues instead of just ideas was what defined it as materialistic instead of just idealistic dialectics. Since it deals with the real materialistic world, the thesis and antithesis are always contradictions that must be resolved by synthesis in order to make progress. Mao Zedong said this succinctly when he said, contradictions cause growth. It's right out of Mao's little red book, okay? So, for example, Marx looked at the contradictions among social classes. So that's what we're going to talk about here, okay? And you'll see that you'll see the plan come forward in this, okay, dialectic. So basically, at the time of the French Revolution, there were five main classes or estates in France. The first estate was the priest or religious class. The second estate was the noble class or government and military class. The third estate was the merchant class of traders, merchants, and skilled craftsmen organized into guilds, or simply the business class. The fourth estate was all of the peasants and laborers of the working class. The fifth estate was vagabonds, criminals, prostitutes, and gypsies. These classes were common all over the world. For example, in India, the caste system was the same, but a caste was more rigid than a class. Brahmins were the religious class. Kshatriyas were the government and military class. Vaishyas were the business class, Shudras, the working class, and Dalits were the vagabonds, unemployed, criminals, and prostitutes. This still actually exists in India today. Okay. So Marx saw the world basically organized into these classes, and these classes were always struggling with each other. These changed over time due to the inherent contradictions between them. This would be what he called the historical dialectic. So history is doing this dialogue, okay? So think of it that way. History itself is doing the dialogue. So the wars of religion, sparked by the Protestant Reformation, was a clash between the religious class and the government or noble class. This was atheism overthrowing God. God does not figure into the materialism precisely because it is spiritual. So this is the way that he would do this. Thesis is the first estate religious class, antithesis, the second estate government military class, synthesis was the new class system with the bourgeois, the capitalist class, the petty bourgeois, the middle class, and the proletariat, the working class, and then the lumpen proletariat, which is the unemployed, homeless, criminals, and prostitutes. The Marxist Revolution was the next major historical class struggle. With God out of the way, they had to get rid of the landed or property class that stifled freedom by controlling and profiting from their control over land or property. This was based on the patriarchy, so the patriarchy had to be destroyed to destroy the property and landed class. So God had to go first, then the patriarchy. The middle class, which had a vested interest in the patriarchal landed and property class, had to be destroyed first to weaken the capitalist class. So at the end of this, the thesis is the petty bourgeois, the middle class. The antithesis is the bourgeois, the capitalist class. The synthesis, what would come out of that, would be the bourgeois, the capitalist class, the proletariat, the working class, and the lumpen proletariat, the unemployed, homeless, etc. In this stage of the struggle, the middle class has to be destroyed because they have no motive to overthrow the capitalist class. They are junior partners. This is a divide-and-conquer mechanism. The middle class would be destroyed, as Lenin said, between the millstones of inflation and taxation. This is happening right now It's happening right now in all of the industrialized nations. The middle class disappears. The working class are impoverished. At the same time, raising the economic and political consciousness through suffering, and of course, as a byproduct of the Lumpen proletariat, the homelessness will grow. We see this happening now. To Marx, the Lumpen proletariat, in other words, the homeless, criminals, etc., are not revolutionary people. They have given up nothing to gain and nothing to lose. But the working class, the proletariat, do have something to lose, so they are your revolutionary base. The dialectic here is the thesis is the bourgeois, the capitalist, the antithesis is the proletariat, the working class, and the synthesis is the proletariat, working class, and under them, the Lumpen proletariat or unemployed. This is the state of communism. Communism would improve society and bring the Lumpen proletariat into the working class. By organizing labor to extinguish unemployment, or as Marxists say, to each according to their need, from each according to their ability. The dialectic of this would be the thesis is the Lumpen proletariat, the antithesis is the proletariat, and then the synthesis is the proletariat, which is the workers' paradise, perfect communism, diversity, equity, and inclusion realized. However, Marx was worried about technological advancement. He said, because you remember, he wrote the manifesto in 1848, there was many technological advances, but nothing like we have now. He said, the production of many useful things will produce many useless people. By useless people, he meant Lumpen proletariat, which are not inclined to a revolution against the capitalist class. The Lumpen proletariat would remain forever slaves if the capitalist class won the class struggle. The dialectic would be the thesis, being the working class, the antithesis, the capitalist class, the bourgeois, and the synthesis would be the bourgeois, the capitalist class, awarding it over the Lumpen proletariat, which is the unemployed, criminals, prostitute, homeless, etc. So the world that you live in right now is a clash between these two narratives. Either the Marxists win or the World Economic Forum wins. And we are all impoverished slaves. We will own nothing and be happy. So in this case, the thesis, the proletariat, is the Marxists, okay, and the antithesis, the capitalist class, is World Economic Forum. And under this dialectic, that the World Economic Forum would win. It is the same either way, however. Either the Zionist Marxists win or the Zionist World Economic Forum wins. Humanity loses in either case. Okay. So let's look at what the World Economic Forum, this bourgeois capitalist class, what their agenda is. Okay. They're clearly fighting for the capitalist agenda, and how can you see this? So first, growth of the Lumpen proletariat. You can see all this with your own eyes. The real unemployment rate is about 28%. The Labor Department definition of unemployment is defined as all those who are looking for work but not yet employed. This generally means just those who are on unemployment and get unemployment checks who have not yet found work. This is not a true number of the unemployed. The government lies with these figures. They keep telling us that we're all employed. You know, are you employed, people?
Yeah.
I mean, do you know everybody you know has got a job, is doing good? I don't think so.
No,
so open immigration.
Right.
Letting foreigners.
The invaders, yeah. Mitch, the invaders coming across the border are invader-replacements. They're not getting injected. They're supposed to outlive us and take our places in many cases. We have maybe a 90% vax rate now. That's a new figure I've got. We used to think it was around 80, but it may be 90. And these people are in trouble. We are in trouble. There are going to be a lot of empty houses, a lot of homes for sale that will never sell, many, many empty buildings. Commercial real estate is falling apart right now. We know that. And these invader replacements are coming in here, getting every single damn thing paid for out of the American taxpayers' money. It's their life's blood. and no one is doing anything about it. No one is doing anything about it. I repeat, no one is doing anything about it.
No matter what, they will not do anything about it. This will not change.
No.
Open immigration,
no.
Letting unemployed foreigners come at will into the country. They increase the number of unemployed or underemployed. The taxpayer has to support them. These people coming across the border are not the proletariat. They're not the workers. They are the lumpen proletariat. They are living off our dime right now. When Congress wants to send $14 billion to the border, they're talking about sending money to New York City and Chicago and places to house, feed, and support these people who will not be working, by the way.
Why can't we address this straight on? Not you, Mitch, but we are being invaded. We are being taken down. We are being destroyed. We are under an open state of war now. That's coming across the border. Look at the video I have up now. It's about the Chinese at the border. They all stand at attention with their arms locked behind them and their wrists and hands like a soldier in the PLA. These are PLA that are coming in here. We are being invaded. No one's talking about it. We're giving away our money to fight a war in Ukraine against Russia. We're fighting the war. It's 50-50 U.S., 50-50 Israeli Zionists. In Gaza to annihilate humanity, we are the guiltiest evil country on the planet. How else can you look at it?
Okay, the way to look at it right here is this is the intentional growth of the lumpen proletariat. With all the unemployed Americans, plus all the unemployed people streaming over the border every day, 12,000 a day, okay, and then on top of that, technology is replacing people's jobs through automation and computerization. Artificial intelligence will accelerate this process.
Yep.
This
yep.
is what Marx was talking about when he said the production of many useful things will produce many useless people.
Yep.
The growth in crime by not prosecuting most crimes and emptying our prisons is part of the growth of the lumpen proletariat also. Lesser penalties make committing crime less risky for the criminal. Criminals are a part of the lumpen proletariat. So that's the direct growth of the lumpen proletariat. Then on the other hand, you have the destruction of the middle class. Like Lenin said, the middle class is crushed between the millstones of inflation and taxation. Three things drive inflation: printing money, driving up fuel prices, and artificially creating shortages. Governments in the West are spending money that we do not have. Printing money directly drives up inflation. Driving up fuel prices is direct inflation. And it is also rolled into the price of all goods because of transportation costs. That cost is fuel cost. Creating shortages. This is done by not drilling for more fuel. This is done by closing markets, creating shortages of food by various means, and by interrupting logistical chains by rules and restrictions on transportation. One thing drives taxation, government spending. The U.S. now is $33 trillion in debt. Our interest payments are $500 billion a year.
No, it's a trillion. Mitch, the last
$3 trillion.
Latest figure is $1 trillion a year debt. Trillion a year. That's
sure.
the debt. That's the interest on the debt. I beg your pardon. No
right.
principal. Interest only.
Right.
It's
just
not 500.
Interest,
it's $1 trillion on the interest. That's it. To Zionist banksters have no legal right to do this.
Yes. So our spending budget is $6.3 trillion per year, but we only collect $4.8 trillion a year in taxes. So taxes have to go up. We cannot pay off the national debt by just paying interest on it. There is only one solution, and that is increasing taxation. You'll see that come. Between inflation and taxation, the middle class will be destroyed and become part of the lumpen proletariat. The pretext for doing this is global warming, and of course, global warming is caused by racism. Race is not an excuse to economically advance minority races. Rather, it is a pretext to destroy the power and economic stability of the traditionally middle-class European peoples. In other words, what I'm saying here is the idea is not to bring marginalized people up. is to crush everybody without exception down. Equity means everybody is impoverished. It doesn't mean anybody is lifted up. Diversity, equity, inclusion, that means it includes everybody. Everybody will be impoverished. Everybody will be helpless, dependent. That's what the lumpen proletariat is.
Right.
The great struggle at present is between these two narratives. Either the capitalist class is destroyed or the working class is destroyed. This is the class warfare model of Marx's critical theory. The actual intention is not just to impoverish humanity, but to exterminate it. You see, without petroleum as fuel, there simply is no way to sustain 8 billion human beings. The goal is to cull humanity through famine, pestilence, and through the climate. You see, humans are 70% water, so if there's no fuel to heat humans, they freeze, and with no fuel to cool humans, they perish from the heat. The natural climate is not going to kill us off, but the Green New Deal will. The purpose of the Green New Deal is genocide of humanity. The Marxists want a smaller population so communism will work. It simply, realistically, cannot sustain a large population.
No.
The World Economic Forum wants a smaller population because they want servants. They do not want to take care of the masses. They just need a few people to be servants, slaves. In short, this is all satanic, to destroy God, to destroy the family, and ultimately to destroy humanity.
You got it. Let me ask you to pause right there, Mitch. That's a perfect place to pause because that is the goal. That is the agenda, and it you can't possibly miss it if you're paying attention. We'll be right back with Mitchell Henderson in just a minute. Okay, welcome back. Talking to Mitch Henderson. Go ahead, Mitch. This is very. Are you still in your communist outfit right now?
Actually, I completed that. But let me just say this. What I just described to you is the Marxist interpretation of history. This is called progress. People who call themselves progressives, this is what they believe in, okay? But there's another side of the coin. There's a non-critical theory, historical evaluation of class evolution. So let me spell that out for you. The alternative way to evaluate class evolution is the opposite. It looks at the historical trend not as progress, but as decay. So let's look at the classes again. Let me remind you. The first estate, the religious class in India, the Brahmin class, Brahmin caste. The second estate,
caste,
government,
caste.
Military.
You got it. It's a caste.
Yeah. In India, the Kshatriya caste, which is government military. The third estate, the business class. In India, the Vaishya caste. The fourth estate is the working class. In India, it's the Shudra caste. And then the fifth estate is the unemployed class, which includes criminals, prostitutes, blah, 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 homeless, vagabonds. And in India, that's called the Dalits. Okay. So looking at historical realism, we can tell we are decaying simply by our architecture. Okay. Because this is what historians, this isn't my invention. This is what historians have pointed out. Okay. Up through the Middle Ages, religious buildings are the biggest structure in any city. That's the Brahmin caste. During the 18th and 19th centuries, government buildings are the largest buildings in a city. That's the Kshatriya caste. During the 20th century, business buildings, skyscrapers, are the biggest buildings in a city, the Vaishya caste. At the same time, single-family homes had become a major feature in all cities, urban and suburban developments, and that's the Shudra caste. During the 21st century, homeless encampments, slums, and favelas have become a major feature in a city. That's the Dalit class, the caste. Okay, the caste. So looking at reality, okay, just looking at what's actually happening, it's an inversion of what of this progress that, that Marx is saying. It is saying that this is not progress. This is decay. This is decadence. We can see it in our cities. We can see in my city, I can see all the homeless encampments, people pooping on the streets and everything. This is down to the untouchables, the Dalits. Okay, this is decay, people. We are not in progress. There's nothing progressive about what's happening. It's all decay. It is going to continue to decay. This is a historical force, okay? It is, it's not something that we can fix. The border will not be closed. Crime will not be stopped, okay? None of these things are going to happen. Your votes don't mean anything at all. This is going to happen no matter what you vote. I would encourage everybody in 2024 to go vote for Donald Trump, because if Donald Trump got every single American vote, he still is not going to be president of the United States. That is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They will kill him before they let him be president. They already know who's going to be president. Joe Biden's going to be president. Every stupid thing you see is just going to continue on, okay? So this indicates that in regard to class evolution, civilization is not progressing, but declining. Civilization began in mud huts, and now we have come full circle. Okay? So I just want to mention one other term that, that has come into, it's now, people are in denial about it, but it's the term cultural Marxism, which is another term for critical theory. The thought of the Frankfurt School of Marxism and Freudianism is sometimes called cultural Marxism, although this is gone into disfavor. This concept came from Antonio Gramsci in the 1920s. He observed that people unthinkingly acquiesce to the culture that they are born into. In other words, there is a consensus reality that society expects you to accept and to believe in the narratives that they dictate. This does not mean that they are true. It is just what they want to program you to believe. I did this and you do this. Everyone does it.
Right.
It is the hive mind that every culture cultivates in its members. Gramsci said in the 1920s that communism would fail in the Soviet Union because they are trying to impose Marxist culture from top down. He said, if you can change the culture, everyone will just unthinkingly accept it as true, and then you can impose Marxism from the bottom up and have a more successful communist state. It will be a juggernaut. You can't stop it. Critical theory is the method by which they make these cultural changes that everyone will just accept as fact. We are there. We live in a time when the culture is expecting us to believe in lies as reality, while the truth is so evident. For example, we can see that there are two genders, male and female, yet we are supposed to believe that gender is based on a social construct created by the patriarchy. The same for race. We can see that there are white, black, and yellow people, yet we are to believe that those distinctions are social constructs built upon racism. We are supposed to believe that white people are the ultimate oppressors, when it is clear that Zionism and Marxism are the ultimate oppressors. This is satanic, a total inversion of reality. Good has become evil, and evil has become good.
Yes, right.
Let me just point out something I saw on TV last week. Okay?
TV.
So Chris Hedges.
All right.
TV. Chris Hedges on MSNBC. So you know, I've just been scanning through YouTube is where I mostly get my news, okay, my local news, okay. For overseas news, I go overseas to get it. But I've been seeing for years, for the past 2 years especially, like you have these mobs of black people, and let me just say what it is black people, it's not white people and Asian people, running into these big box stores, a mob of 30 or 40 of them, and just stealing things and running out. They do this to liquor stores. In Memphis, Tennessee, there was a liquor store, like 40 people pulled up in a car real fast, like a flash mob, went in and stole everything and ran away. Okay. So these are not these. So here's the thing. We see that with our own eyes. We see it all of the time, repeatedly, month after month, year after month, year after year. Okay. But Chris Hedges did a news segment on MSNBC, and he said, well, that's not true. There is not more shoplifting. There is less shoplifting. Okay. Now I saw somebody deconstruct that because they said, okay, they got this information on less shoplifting from a criminal justice organization that is for justice reform, and they were, in other words, not arresting people and letting people out of jail. And what their methodology was to exclude New York and Los Angeles and some of the other big cities. Don't count their shoplifting, just count the shoplifting in places where these mob shopliftings are not happening. And guess what? There's less shoplifting, okay? So that would be like if you wanted a survey of apples and oranges or fruits and vegetables, but you're going to say, well, we're not going to count the vegetables. We're just going to count the fruits, okay? Uh-huh. It's bogus statistics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So the thing is, they're telling you, they're just bombarding us right now, saying, oh, this crime isn't happening like this. We see it on the TV with our own eyes, yet they sincerely expect us to believe that what we're seeing is just simply not true. It's some racist plot to make black people look bad, is what it is. Okay. Uh-huh. Just like Gavin Newsom in talking, debating with DeSantis, the stats for California, 500 crimes per, violent crimes per 100,000 people, Florida, 250 violent crimes per 100,000 people. And Gavin Newsom stood up there and lied to everybody and says, no, California has far less crime than Florida has. I mean, this is how they operate. They just lie to your face. I mean, you can see what the truth is, but they will tell you a lie. Or consider this, Jeff. We see these propaganda forces about the evil Russians bombarding civilians in Ukraine. And they show the apartment buildings that the Russians have hit. And, well, there's some relatively minor damage to these big skyscrapers and stuff. Well, in Israel, the entire building comes crashing down. But it's the Russians who are doing evil, not the Israelis.
Thousands of people in Gaza are said to be still trapped, probably dead now, under many of those huge buildings that have come down, with American bombs dropped by American jets, flown by Zionist pilots. We're doing this.
Right.
This is us. If we had cut the money off, all of you listening know this never would have happened, because the Jews would not have had the money and the equipment and the ammunition and the planes to do it. They own us. They wag the dog. We are the body. They are the tail, and they're wagging the dog.
America is the tool that accomplishes genocide of the human race. We're the ones. We made the COVID kill shot happened. We made that. Warp speed, right away, beautiful shot, beautiful big shot. We made that happen, okay? We're the ones who supply the bombs that are unleashed on the Russian people. We are the people, we are the ones who provide the weaponry to destroy the women and children in Palestine. We are the ones who do that. We've actually been doing this for a pretty long time. We've been the edge of the sword. I can't really get into all the theology of this, but you see Esau, who's the evil son, you know, back in these early times of the Bible and stuff, God gave him a great sword. That wasn't a great sword to conquer. That was a great sword that he is the weapons seller. He is the one who provides the arms for the destruction, okay? And Edom just means the Reds, the communists, the Marxists. So the people who we are supposed to pray and kiss their butt, Israel and the Jews, this is Satan, people. Look around you. Just think about this. In the end times, if you tell the truth, if you identify the truth, they will crush you like a bug, okay? So just think about this. Who are you not allowed to criticize? Who are you not allowed to point a finger at? That is Satan. You may not criticize Satan. You may not point the finger at him. Okay? It is Zionism. It is Marxism. It is the the Pharisees and the Sadducees. These are the people you are not allowed to criticize. These are the people who want all of us dead. And the, what little remains, they want us as slaves. Okay? So when I walk around today, I mean, I'm sorry, but even my relatives and stuff, they're just like, their God is Israel and the Jews. Zionism is their God. Jesus Christ is not their God anymore.
No.
Because they will not speak against Israel. They will not speak against Zionism. They will not do it.
Not a chance. When the bell rings, got to remember this. I don't care what most Jewish people or people who identify as being Jewish say. When the bell rings and brave little Israel is in need, they will answer to the tune of 95% of them. That's my guess. They will be there. They will do whatever they're asked to do. Now, the Jews who don't conform must stand up.
You know that they will too, right?
That's right. The Jews who want nothing to do with this Zionist satanic evil must stand up, but they won't because the pressure on them is brutal to conform or to be quiet.
And listen to this, Jeff. So there's something like 16, 17 million Jews in the world. Scripture tells us how many good Jews there are. There's 144,000 of them, period. Okay.
Wow.
That is
well,
it.
I didn't know, but that's
there
probably
is
about
no
right.
More
That'd be
than
a
that.
Good guess. Yeah, I get it.
There is no more than that. So it's not a mystery, okay? I mean, Scripture says, Christ says in Revelation, who is the problem in Revelation? The synagogue of Satan is who the problem is. Then he names the Jewish people who put him on the cross to kill him. The Jewish people did.
Right.
The Pharisees and the Sadducees, these arrogant people who think they're superior to every other person on earth. As a matter of fact, Zionism posits that the Jews are superior to God himself. Their arrogance and their blasphemy screams out. Okay. So, you know, if you can't admit the truth to yourself, I mean, who is your God? Is Israel your God? If that's your God, you're in big trouble, and you better reevaluate everything you think. It's fundamental, is what it is.
I agree. I concur. I mean, this whole thing is really preposterous. Mitch, and I forgive you, all of you listening. I got to tell this again. 0.002% of the world population is running the planet.
Yes, exactly. It is. It's absurd. You know, we support them against our own interests. You know, I mean, look at this whole thing. I mean, you should be paying attention to the Congress up here. They're saying, oh, well, we should really take care of our own border before we take care of Israel's and Ukraine's. And this is shot down as absurd. You know, it is like, oh, there's no connection between the two problems. Yes, there certainly is. You know, this is another thing of the big lie. You can see our nation is being invaded. On one hand, you have them saying, oh, all these terrorists are coming into the country and stuff. And then on the other hand, you're saying, oh, it's immoral to stop all these terrorists from coming into the country. You know, I mean, there is Orwellian doublethink at its finest. It's like we can't, we have to allow the people who want to destroy us to enter. We have to allow that. That's the morality.
Right.
But it's an inverted morality. Okay. Everything about them is inverted. Okay. Everything about them is. It's just permeates our society. The deception is it permeates all of society and stuff. And, you know, people are usually too busy with their own problems and their daily things and want to be entertained and stuff. So they just like, oh, yeah, Israel is God. And, yeah, we have to do whatever they want and stuff. And you know, let's just not be bothered. It's against your personal interest and the interest of your family against the interests of your friends, against the interests of the people that you love. You are to abdicate all of that, okay, for what is absolute nonsense.
Got it. Total nonsense. Hey, all you got to do is read the Talmud. Come on, just read it. Understand. Read some of Rabbi Schneerson's writings, S-C-H-N-E-E-R-S-O-N. He's the head or the founder of the current Lubavitch movement. The Lubavitchers think he was God incarnate, I think. Anyway, read what he has to say about non-Jews. That's you, most of you. And we've got some absolutely first-class people out there who are Jewish, who are listening. They get it, but there's not much they can do, and I don't blame them for it. And I'd cover this story the same way if some other minority group were doing all this. But I have to tip my hat again to most Jews. They are very smart. They know how to play the game. They've gotten in and taken over most every major power center. That didn't just happen. It wasn't given to them. They just took advantage of a mass of people who weren't particularly smart. Most goyim are not smart enough to stay up on this game. They can't. They just don't have it for whatever reason. I don't know what the reason is. But
most goyim are humble people that have no interest in
humble,
in ruling
kind,
the world and
moral.
Other
at least
people.
They used to be. Correct.
Yeah.
And that's read instantly and played against them. Boy, is it. You know this.
I need to point this out, too. Just like in the Bolsheviks in 1972, they ate their young. Like these seven Politburo members, well, by 1930, they're all extinct, okay? They were arrested and executed, okay? Look at what's happening in our country now. So this critical theory actually is the thing that got all the people to back the Palestinians and to have mercy on them and look at Israel as being the evil people. And the institutions like Harvard, University of Pennsylvania, all these presidents that are now under thing. Look, they're being thrown under the bus. Okay. They are the people who are the people who were put in those positions by the Zionists, and now they're not useful anymore. It doesn't matter what your credentials are. If you go against the Zionists, you are going to be canceled, period. It doesn't matter what you've done or which side you're on. You're ultimately, if you speak against them, you're done. Okay, so... I personally had a thing in this. I got elected to a board of directors, okay? And, I didn't think much of it and stuff, but once I got there, I realized, oh, my God, these people that want this job, they are terrible human beings, horrible human beings. What they basically want to do is they want to get into power, then they want to elevate themselves by saying, oh, I want to do these wonderful things for the community. So they screw the community over by taking money from them so they can do their pet projects that they think is so special and wonderful. But, you know, actually the people would rather just have their money and spend it on what they want to spend it on instead of spending on this guy's vanity and ego projects and stuff. Okay. Right. These are evil people. Your city council is evil people. Your state legislatures, national legislatures, United Nations, they're all the same kind of people. They are all evil, all of them. There is not one exception anywhere. Okay. I assure you, not one.
I mean,
it's time to open your eyes and look and see.
Nobody has your
interests at heart except you. Period.
Well said, Mitch. And that's true. If we don't care about ourselves, take care of ourselves, nourish ourselves, we're done. We're done. You can't wait for the government to come and do anything. No one's going to help you but you. If you don't help yourselves, what good are you? That's the old line, but it's true. All right, well, that was really quite a walk there, Mitch. Thank you for that. Wow. Thanks. Good work.
You're welcome.
All right, see you next week.
Okay. See everybody next week.
Mitchell Henderson. What a mind. Very good. Okay. Monday is in the books. We'll be back with you tomorrow night. Take care. And God, somehow there's still time to do a little preparation if you can do it. Hope you do. Talk to you tomorrow.